bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook, NFL Week 2, Monday Night Football Edition. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host. But now's the perfect time to remind you to go to FanDuel.com/bettheboard. Take advantage of all the generous sign-up bonuses that FanDuel has in store for you. A couple unique promotions to keep your eyes on going forward. All new users can risk $5, win $150, no matter which side they pick in the Jets-Broncos game this coming weekend. And of course, a special promotion a week from now for the Monday Night Football Showdown between the Philadelphia Eagles and Dallas Cowboys. Payne, second week essentially all in the books. What were your first thoughts in terms of what we saw unfold?
This was one of the more frustrating weeks. And I'm typically over games after they happen, but you know, this with this recap show here that you have me doing, I suddenly have to relive things Monday morning.
It's supposed to be cathartic. This is supposed to be a safe space where you can vent, you can get it all off your chest, and by the time we wrap things up, that's when you begin to move forward for the subsequent week.
I appreciate you making it linger an extra, you know, 24 to 48 hours.
Team player.
Saturday. Yeah.
Team player.
Team guy. Saturday, we had two totals not get there in the first half, but of course, full game stayed under. So, you know, you get those reverse results, and if you flip them, right, it's a winning week. And then middle of last week, we took a position for Sunday over 23.5 first half in Rams-Colts. That's why it got to 24. That did not go very well. Colts had two possessions where they have a first and goal from the one, and then they got 0 points there, obviously. And then another possession where they had second and goal from the three, and got 0 points there, too. So, of course, over was a great bet despite the ridiculousness. And then the full game proceeds to go over. And then the one that our loyal listeners know all too well about. Eagles plus 3.5 for us. They dominate the first half, but they go into the break trailing. And I watched that game pretty intently. Went back and watched this morning. Downloaded all our metrics and whatnot. They outgained the 49ers by 170 yards the first 26 minutes of that game. And you had the ticky-tack call go against us on the Jalen Reagor touchdown. Did he step out of bounds? Was he pushed out? Clearly reestablished, but they claim he willingly went out of bounds there. And then you have the 94-yard drive, first and goal from the 49ers one, and you get 0 points. So you dominate that first half, and the 49ers get the momentum score before break. You hate to say this, but Todd, we've been doing this long enough where you kind of understand the game might be over at that point, even if the scoreboard says otherwise. When you dominate and you should be up 17-0, but you mentally see the scoreboard's like 7-3, Jesus. It didn't feel like a 4-point game at halftime.
Those spots are always interesting. I had one of our colleagues who you know I know quite well send me a text. He couldn't get 3.5 early on in the week in Philadelphia, so refrained from betting the game. Shoots me a note at halftime and goes, hey, look, is this the opportunity I need to try and get on? He had an opportunity, you know, he could have bet Philadelphia on the money line at a reasonable price. I said, honestly, I said, you see the momentum score. It's a back-breaking drive, 97 yards, the 49ers covered. And I said, you might want to try and sit this one out because exactly what you said. You watch enough of these games, you start to get the feel for game flow and go, okay, that first half went poorly, but I feel like we have a puncher's chance. Despite only being down 7-3 going into the break, I wasn't overly optimistic about what we were going to see in the final 30 minutes.
No, and I was relatively happy with how the game was playing out. We kind of mentioned Jonathan Gannon coming up with a more sophisticated game plan defensively because that's kind of his MO, one of kind of the giant young stars up and coming as a defensive mind, loved what he did. Offensively, we said attack deep. The Eagles did that a little bit better, although I wasn't really in love with some of the stuff other than that, right? There was a lot of trickery pre-snap, which the 49ers probably aren't the team to do that against. They see Kyle Shanahan's offense all day at practice with all the window dressing and trickery pre-snap and post-snap. Didn't really attack the intermediate area of the 49ers defense, which, you know, we knew corner was an issue. Mosley ended up getting downgraded to out. We saw Verrett go out with the knee injury last week. And so you're down your top two corners. You call basically, you know, pull Josh Norman off the scrap heap and throw him out there. And so you want to attack that area. And it's great that they did it downfield, but you also have to do it in the intermediate area, which the Eagles did not do very well there. So very frustrating game from that standpoint, because if you get up 17-0 there, it's like, yeah, okay. We took the road trip 1-1, Sunday night football on deck against Aaron Rodgers. Let's kind of shift our focus there.
Yeah, it's always interesting. I mean, in the NFL, I think I was taught when I first started in the industry, if you go back, there are essentially three momentum plays in an NFL game. And this is an oversimplification for those folks who want to eviscerate me for saying this, but you need two of those three momentum plays to go your way when you have a short home dog or a short home favorite. And I really believe in that Eagles 49ers game. You know, all the momentum plays early went the way of the 49ers, from the Jalen Reagor push out, the 49ers, who deserve full marks for, you know, bending but not breaking on the fourth and goal stand there. And then, of course, the 49ers getting that momentum score before the half that allows them to take a 4-point lead into the break. And for all of our listeners out there, we normally start Monday with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Typically, we like to go in the optimistic and positive direction. But Payne, since we've already started on a bit of a somber note, relatively speaking, what else was disappointing to you that you saw unfold over the weekend?
It wasn't shocking in any way, but I thought the Steelers' offense just kind of proved to be what they are. And it was a game against the Raiders that I just wanted to stay off completely. Sharp money hit the Steelers -5 early in the week. Got as high as 6.5 some places Sunday morning before Joe Hayden and Devin Bush got announced out around, you know, 11:30 a.m. Dipped back below that secondary key number. TJ Watt then, you know, departs in the first half. So Pittsburgh was basically without a key cog at each level of their defense. Offensively, we knew they would be a train wreck this season. You know, you don't win many games in 2021 with less than 250 yards of offense, which is what the Steelers had last week against Buffalo. That's a great win, right? You look at it and you're like, oh, 6.5-point dog on the road, one outright, easy peasy. Win expectancy was fantastic, led by double digits. But the offense was just freaking terrible last week. And I don't know if there's going to be this massive fix, right? Big Ben came out in the postgame presser last week and said, we're going to need to rely on our defense this season. It's not really what you want to hear from your quarterback. The offensive line isn't good, so the ground game stinks and the pass protection's poor. Basically, what you have, if you're a Steelers fan, and you probably already know this because you've watched it for two seasons, you have a 39-year-old Big Ben treating the ball like a hot potato with a quick release, and he's dinking and dunking the ball down the field inaccurately into tight windows. Only Tua has completed shorter throws into tighter windows than Big Ben through two games. The idea of high-risk throws in areas that result in low rewards isn't really like this viable long-term strategy on offense, but it's really the only option Pittsburgh has to this point. And now it looks like Deontay Johnson could be out a little bit with this knee injury.
Yeah, I think we'll all wait and see if it's an MCL, if it's an ACL. No injury report, official diagnosis there regarding Deontay Johnson's status, but kind of additional salt in the wound on the final play of the game for those folks who may have tuned off. Not only fantasy implications, but of course, the best receiver the Steelers have on that roster. You mentioned Tua, Payne, and I think a lot of people look. I know it was one of the book's worst decisions of the day. Buffalo goes down to your neck of the woods, wins 35-0, but masked in that dominant performance, the Buffalo offense for me still appears to be operating in fits and spurts, less than 5 yards per play, and Josh Allen nowhere near the quarterback we saw like the world on fire a season ago.
There's certainly a little something going on there. No, Emmanuel Sanders isn't 100% healthy. And there was this little lull in their offense after they got up 14-0 where, you know, they turned the ball over a couple times. The Dolphins still had a chance to kind of keep themselves in it. And then once it was like 14-0 and Buffalo was driving, it kind of flipped off that game. But you're right. The offense is, there's something not happening right now. That's for sure. The ground game appeared efficient in week one. They start the game with the Singletary explosive run for a touchdown. So I do expect that offense to try to run the ball a little bit more. But Josh Allen's missing on some throws that he didn't miss last year. And the offensive line still isn't the best. And I think you're working your way in there with some receivers like, you know, Emmanuel Sanders that quite aren't up to speed yet. But you're right. The offense was not humming despite, you know, the points they put on the board. They went over their team total of 26.5. So they exceeded expectation on the scoreboard there. But down to down, it wasn't the most efficient thing that we've seen from Buffalo's offense.
And I don't think by any stretch it's a reason to panic with a young football team early on. We've seen it time and time again from Super Bowl contenders. You don't need to play your best football in September. And Buffalo, like everyone else in the division, now sits at 1-1. So for all those Bills fans out there that are frustrated with what they've seen, it's absolutely nothing to be concerned about just yet through only two games. Joe Burrow, Payne, watched that game against the Chicago Bears. Clearly not alone in responsibility for that 2017 loss. Those folks that grabbed the Bengals +3, congrats on getting the best of the number. Count your lucky stars that you were able to get a push out of that game. Three interceptions on three straight passes. The Bears' defense seemed to be all over them. And suddenly, the dominant offensive performance we saw from Burrow in the Bengals week one against the Vikings doesn't look nearly as dynamic when the Vikings get absolutely shredded by the Arizona Cardinals.
You know, I think when you put into perspective that the Bengals were a team that was projected to win 6.5 games, and they go out and they win at home as an underdog, that there is this expectation for them to be better than what they are. And I do think there's an ability to kind of be better down the road as Burrow starts to get a little bit, you know, have more chemistry with his guys. I mean, he sat out the entire offseason, basically, rehabbing the knee. There wasn't a ton of chemistry there. We think the defense got a little bit better, but even last week, it was more the Vikings beating themselves with 10 first half penalties and your best player, Dalvin Cook's fumbling the ball in overtime when they're going in for, you know, the potential game winning score. But this was, you know, I need to go back and watch Bengals Bears a little closer. But once we kind of elected not to go under in the first half and then I see the first score, it's like I don't want to infuriate myself. So I didn't watch a ton of that. But what I did see and what I read and what I'm looking at metrically this morning, obviously not the best day for Burrow. 3 picks on 3 straight plays. That's an NFL record. And it's a little surprising because the first 2 picks were bad reads from clean pockets. The final one, he had pressure in his face. The ball was tipped, it looked like. But you know, this was a guy last year before he goes down with an injury, 199 consecutive passes as a rookie without a pick. So that 3-pick stretch, very, you know, unlike Joe Burrow. The Bengals offense was pretty grounded. You know, things look better than they appear. I think, you know, when you look at the surface, right, you had the 2 late drives with touchdowns to Chase and Higgins, both in the final 5 minutes. And it kind of masks what transpired throughout that game. Again, I do think there is this thing to the offense for Cincinnati where Burrow is still working himself back into form. You know, you just can't miss the entire offseason. You can't play one series in the preseason. And I know for him personally, the focus was getting his body right and not necessarily the playbook and the chemistry with teammates. Now that focus can shift a little bit.
One thing I will say for Bears fans who want to pound their chest in the wake of a 2017 win, you talked about it with the Steelers, not going to win many NFL football games when your offense gains 206 yards. And Bears fans also who are clamoring for Justin Fields to start sooner rather than later, be careful what you wish for. All in signs point to Fields being the guy going forward once we know what's wrong with Andy Dalton's knee. Didn't look good from a non-contact standpoint, potential torn ACL, but the Bears, a robust 3.4 yards per play in the victory. Everything we saw that looked positive against that Rams defense, suddenly not there against the Cincinnati Bengals. One thing, Payne, that stood out for me, and I know Titans fans won't be happy because they feel like we unfairly pick on Mike Vrabel around these parts. The Titans come back. They erase a 24-9 deficit against the Seattle Seahawks in a game that looked like it was going to get away from them early on. The Titans score to make it 30-29 with 30 seconds to go. Now, credit to the Titans for fighting back. First off, not quite sure why Mike Vrabel doesn't allow a 10-second runoff, knowing he's got 2 timeouts in his back pocket, and you don't want to give Russell Wilson any time. But Payne, the strength of your football team is your offense. Derrick Henry is running at will. and I mean abusing Seattle at every chance he gets. Vrabel, instead of trying to win it with his offense on the field going for two, elects to kick the extra point, putting his fate of the football team in the hands of a coin flip. Tennessee wins the toss. They still don't score. They get a three and out from Seattle and win the game. But the decision-making there, in my opinion, that went in a negative manner gets masked because of the result. Yes, if we all know we can win a coin toss or our defense is going to force a three and out, you make that call. But a little bit staggering that the Titans didn't feel they wanted to try and win it right there on the road in a game where they had all the momentum late in regulation.
You do have the momentum. And just on the surface, you're looking at this and saying, hey, we're a 6.5-point dog here. Let's play with a little more variance. Let's understand that the best unit on our team is the offense, and the worst unit on the opposing team is the defense. And if we just only have to get 2 or 3 yards to win this game and not give it back to Russell Wilson, let's go ahead and do that. But ultimately, Vrabel chose to kick the PAT, go into overtime. But again, it wasn't just that decision. It was like how you managed the clock and allowing the ball to get back into Russell Wilson's hands late. I will say this. Aside from a couple of those decisions, I think you have to give the Titans some credit for being resilient. You know, before the game even starts, you lose your left tackle and injury, you know, in warm-ups.
So
right?
Bizarre. So bizarre, the situation there.
You go down 15 at halftime. Nothing is going the Titans' way. You have to settle for 3 field goals in the first half. The 12th man is just rocking. You got jobbed on the Julio Jones touchdown. The defense, as you alluded to, is getting shredded. And as a 6.5-point dog, you battle back. And the defense gets some stops. Derrick Henry literally put the offense on his back. Henry faced 8-plus man boxes on 54% of his runs, second most in week 2. Yet he averaged more than 2.5 yards per attempt above expectation. The Titans defense pays Vrabel back with the decision, right? They get the monster stop in overtime, and they're really the ones that set up the game-winning drive. But you're right. You kind of see the decision-making process where Vrabel doesn't necessarily trust his offense, and then you kind of fast forward to Sunday Night Football, and you have Harbaugh out there like saying, are we going for this in overtime? Are we going for this in overtime? Lamar, what do you want to do? Let's go do this. And it's just a different mindset there with an organization in Baltimore that is analytically driven.
Well, you went somewhere where I wanted to go, because I do want to highlight some of the positive things that we saw over the weekend. And of course, Baltimore, for those folks who watch the game, they hands down the most entertaining game of the weekend. The Ravens battle back. They erase a 35-24 deficit against the Kansas City Chiefs. A late fumble from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Baltimore gets the football back. Kansas City full complement of timeouts. And there was zero hesitation pain between Lamar and John Harbaugh. You have to love the amount of trust he showed in his young quarterback.
And it also helps when you get a great spot, because Sammy Watkins is 2 yards short of the first down marker.
That's fair as well.
The offense rolls back out there. It looks like they're about 0.5 yard short. So that makes the decision process much easier. But you have to say this, right? Tough spot for Baltimore. They are an East Coast team that played on the West Coast Monday night. That game did not end until well after midnight on the East Coast. You know, another 5.5-hour flight back. You were beaten and banged up, didn't have 2 guys on the O-line. We knew all of the other injuries offensively. Your corner situation was a little bit uncertain as well. So you kind of slayed the dragon, right? That was your kryptonite. We saw what Lamar and Sammy Watkins were celebrating after the fumble. Awesome. And maybe that's the thing that kind of changes your season and builds confidence for the future. And it was fantastic. Again, utter man, you beat the Chiefs. In saying that, I kind of think it was good for the Chiefs as well, because there was all this talk about going 17-0. They're wanting to run the table this year. And now you get smacked in the face. You don't have that pressure. But I will say this. When I watched the game, to me, everything seemed to go perfect for Baltimore in the sense that they kept it close enough where they could run the ball. And yet, here you are down 11, late third quarter. Patrick Mahomes has the ball at midfield. The game's over. And you've played the best you possibly could. And he just makes an uncharacteristic interception on third down. I don't know what he's trying to do there. And then even despite that, you have the game-winning drive sealed and delivered. And for whatever reason, Andy Reid decide not to run offense. We're just going to hand it off to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like our 97th best player in offense. And we're going to let him determine things. And so that's kind of the interesting part to this game is Baltimore undermanned, horrific situation, beats the Kansas City Chiefs. But it's like, you know, I watched that and like, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs kind of lost that game. And that's kind of how I viewed it. But it was a fantastic win for Baltimore, and I don't think it'll end up being a bad loss for the Kansas City Chiefs either.
No, I don't think Kansas City will come back to a game they lost in prime time in September and go, that's where our season got away from us by any stretch of the imagination. Of course, the Chiefs have a big showdown in the NFC West this weekend, or AFC West, excuse me, where they'll welcome in the Los Angeles Chargers. Payne, I was pretty impressed with Matt Rhule. His defense overall, they hold the Saints to the lowest yardage output during the Sean Payton era. Saints average 3 yards per play, get just 43 offensive snaps, and the Saints never snapped the ball once. Or excuse me, I take that back. They never drove inside the Carolina 20 once. Their only touchdown came on an 18-yard drive. Pretty impressive effort from a young defense coming of age.
Absolutely. And the Panthers' defense is one pro bettors really gravitated towards this offseason. It was young and it was improving, and you had Brian Burns, who's kind of turning into a premier pass rusher at this point. You drafted what most think is a shutdown corner in J.C. Horn. Jeremy Chin does a great job roaming the middle of the field. So you have talent at every level. Now, you did face Zach Wilson making his first NFL start in the road with fans in the stands. Jameis and the Saints were in a prime letdown position. But they were fantastic. Carolina got to Jameis Winston on 61% of his dropbacks. The pressure was incredible. Whether it was natural, whether it was manufactured, Jameis had a passer rating of 4 when pressured and 0 when blitzed.
His 0.0.
The completion percentage overall, 14% below expectation. There are some, you know, real players here on Carolina's defense. The weakness of the team, though, is still the offensive line. We saw the Jets register an 80% pass rush win rate week one. They did a good job, though, here, holding up against the Saints defensive front that just dominated Green Bay. If Carolina's offensive line can gradually improve this season, Panthers become pretty interesting here, Todd.
Especially in an NFC that, other than maybe the top of the pecking order, doesn't have a clearly defined middle class, so to speak. I mean, we know the Rams and Bucks will be there in the thick of things. We know that the NFC West is going to be an absolute beast, but who knows? Carolina has a chance to crack the back end of the party, a more than winnable game coming up on Thursday where they're a touchdown plus road favorite against the Houston Texans. Payne, one quarterback who we've blasted multiple times on this very podcast over the last couple of years, I do want to give him props for performance on Thursday night. That, of course, being Daniel Jones, 22 of 32 for 249 yards, 9 carries, 95 yards, and a rushing touchdown. More importantly, didn't turn the ball over once, and his mastery of the Washington football team would have continued had it not been for an errant call from the Zebras that the NFL sent a nice letter of apology to the New York Football Giants about.
What a nice letter. Doesn't that just fix everything?
Does it remind you of eighth grade? You know, when you try to date older women and they just say, you know what, Payne, we have to let you down gently. It's just not going to work out.
There is that nice little transition post eighth grade when you're about to be a freshman and you're kind of mingling with that crowd a little bit, and you feel like you're just invincible as you're talking to the older class. Getting back on task here. Daniel Jones deserved better, and we talked about his ability to handle Washington's defense over his career, and that did not change. And we also outlined how Washington's defense is not as good as what people believe it to be. They are overrated right now. The perception is higher than what the reality is of that defense. And Daniel Jones is willing to attack Washington through the air and on the ground. Averaged 10 yards a carry. Impressive through the air too, right? He was pressured on 45% of his dropbacks, but his completed air yards were 9.2, almost a full yard better than any quarterback that's played yet this week. His completion percentage was 3 yards better than expectation. Now, you can't settle for 5 field goals on the highway and expect to win, but the Giants were the clear-cut right side in that game from a spread perspective, and they should have won outright. And as you alluded to, right, like just poor luck with the refs botching that. Felt like a real rough week overall. For the refs this week, didn't it?
Inconsistency. Let's call it Yes. Inconsistency on a variety of fronts. and hopefully it gets rectified. They're still not in midseason form by any stretch, but yeah, I think there were a number of game-changing plays that kind of get swept under the rug. So I'm with you in that regard. Did see an interesting note. May have to dig into it. Apparently, the last 12 games played in the NFC East between teams in that division against one another, the underdog 11-1 against the spread, or maybe 12-1 now at this point. So I think it speaks to the level of parity we've seen in that division from top to bottom. But something to keep tabs on, as we'll have a big showdown on Monday Night Football between the Cowboys and Eagles as well. What else, Payne, stood out to you in a positive manner, or things that were pleasant surprises over the weekend?
You know, I think we probably go to Teddy Bridgewater, because that was one of those weird games where there was an inflated line, and that was the great debate all week. Are we taking Jacksonville in their home opener with a line that should have been, you know, or would have been 2.5 last week? We've now crossed the 3 of the 4, and we're on the 6. Is there enough value? And we saw Jacksonville get out to an early lead. But Teddy Bridgewater was fantastic again, and we kind of said this coming into the season, that Denver was projected to face the very easiest schedule of passing defenses. Jacksonville is one of those. But what I love to see is Teddy's pushing the ball downfield this year, and he's keeping his accuracy. Almost 11 intended air yards per throw yesterday, yet the accuracy 9% better than expectation. Teddy was better under pressure and when he was blitzed than he was from a clean pocket. Pressured on 37% of dropbacks, but didn't have a single turnover-worthy throw. So it's pretty clear at this stage that Bridgewater is confident right now. He's heard the whispers of being a game manager, and he's expanded his game a little bit. He's to push the ball deeper. And Denver has the weapons and the schedule to be extremely efficient through the air all season.
Teddy, you talked about his weapons. Cortland Sutton looked very healthy in his second game back. Now knows he can assert himself as their true number one while Jerry Jeudy's sidelined. I think it'll allow him to build some rapport with Teddy. That secondary is one of the best in the league, if not the best. And as you mentioned, and we talked about in the preseason podcast, a schedule that's beyond favorable for Denver to build some momentum and become formidable in the AFC. And while we talk about Denver and what their defense did, Payne, rookie, we were reminded, I guess, over the weekend why rookie quarterbacks are indeed rookies. Trevor Lawrence struggled mightily. Zach Wilson, 3 interceptions in his first 5 passes against that New England defense. Justin Fields, albeit coming in relief, didn't look like he was processing the NFL game nearly as quickly as he needs to. Now, of course, all those things can change. And then there was Davis Mills, who stepped in for Tyrod Taylor, going 8 of 18, 1 touchdown, 1 interception for a shade more than 100 yards. I think it's always fascinating to try and figure out what these rookies can bring to the table in week one, because fan bases obviously see a first rounder, in the case of the Texans, a third round quarterback, kind of being the saving grace and the silver lining. But these guys have to learn to walk before they run, and don't want anybody to panic prematurely. Some of these guys may struggle in difficult situations.
Davis Mills, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson. Extremely small sample size, but right now, number 1, 2, 3, and 4 in terms of worst completion percentage compared to expectation. Davis Mills is, as you alluded to, the first pick Houston had this past draft. He's a third rounder. I think he's a guy with some upside, but he's not an NFL starter right now. Trevor Lawrence, very disappointing. I was more disappointed in his week one performance. I know it's on the road in front of a hostile crowd, but Houston's defense is no great shakes. This was obviously a more difficult task, and ultimately what kept me off taking the inflated price was a young quarterback with a very vanilla offense against a Vic Fangio defense. That's extremely difficult. Justin Fields, we saw him kind of get tossed in there. Let's see what it looks like with a game plan that's actually devised for him.
Very fair point.
Yeah, Zach Wilson. I mean, could you have faced tougher defenses so far? I mean, Carolina's defense was fantastic. And then you get Bill Belichick. I mean, we know his history facing young quarterbacks. So
Andy plays Denver this weekend. I mean, talk about a tough trifecta for Zach Wilson. Dude's going to come out of there going, I'm going to need a mental stability coach to try and keep peace of mind.
Yes. And the offensive line, you know, the O-line, which was built up by Joe Douglas this offseason, suddenly without its very best part in Mekhi Becton. So he's not getting blindside protection either. So that's all these teams, right? The reason these young quarterbacks are on these teams is because they weren't very good to begin with, right? And so, you know, you're playing for a poor team. You're going up against some tough competition, specifically.
It's Monday. It's okay.
Wilson. And so that's really where the struggles are coming in. But let's give them some time and hopefully things pan out for these guys. The one thing I will ask you.
Sure.
Before we like transition here. It would be a disservice both in entertainment and I think something that we like discussing. What did you think of Mike McCarthy late in that game?
That I think I tweeted out that may have been the worst clock management I've seen from an NFL head coach in quite some time. No idea what the hell that was. I mean, there is no justification for the way Mike McCarthy handled the final minute plus of that game. I thought it was a great start to the drive. He was methodical. He went, all right, we're going to win it with our offense on the field. We're going to make sure that the Chargers don't have a chance to get the football back. But Payne, how the hell do you run 30 seconds off the clock? You have timeouts left there. And Greg Zuerlein, well, you know, we know that he's got the ability to hit long field goals. This guy hasn't exactly been accurate. He wasn't in week one. And you settle for a 56-yard field goal as the game winner as time expires instead of trying to pick up another 15 to 20 yards to win this thing?
I loved the drive initially. It was like, we're just cool, calm, collected. The situation is not going to impact us. We're just going to methodically move this puppy downfield. We're going to kick a game-winning field goal. The Chargers are not going to see the ball on offense. It was awesome. And then all of a sudden, it's like, what in the world is going on here? Dallas got one play off the final 33 seconds, and they had a timeout. I can't believe Kellen Moore called a run play. That was the most botched endgame I've seen in a long time. And the greatest part is the press conference afterwards provided even more entertainment. Mike McCarthy said he didn't want to settle for a 56-yarder, but several problems arose. He said, McCarthy, one of the players came off the field that shouldn't have. Just a communication error. He then blames the stadium. I don't know if you've heard this. He said the digital clock.
I didn't hear all this. I'd have been dying if I heard this.
He then proceeds to say, Kellen Moore had issues too with the clock. He was blocked by a camera guy and couldn't see. And so and it was just excuse and lie after lie. So, but get kind of reeling this back in. Even with Pollard, as dynamic as he is, you shouldn't call a run. And when Kellen does call a run, as soon as Pollard stops, call your timeout. There's still 28 seconds left at that point. The entire playbook is open. The entire field is still open to you at that point. You can throw a 17-yard seam over the middle, still clock the ball, and have plenty of time to run your field goal unit out there. And, you know, let's be candid here. Like, Mike McCarthy isn't a good coach. And I understand the internet age that we're living in. But if I'm Jerry Jones, I'm expecting more from my $160 million quarterback, too. Like, if I'm Dak, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Did he just sit in a running play? I'm changing that. Like, if you think for a second Tom Brady or Peyton Manning aren't checking out of that bullshit run play, you're out of your mind. So, like, for me, Dak isn't removed from shouldering some of the blame here, too. At the very least, call a timeout. Have, like, an understanding of time and situation if you're Dak.
I mean, Payne. Shane Falco's audibling out of that play. Matt Saracen in his second start as starting quarterback of the Dillon Panthers knows that he's got to audible away from a run to try and preserve a little time at the end of the game. But, you know, again, these are the things we talk about that I think fans go, well, we won the game. What does it matter? Don't ever let the results mask some of the deficiencies in the process, because if you make mistakes over and over again, you can get away with it in a short period of time, but over the long haul, it's going to rear its ugly head. And I think it's a perfect microcosm for the way things work in handicapping. When we talk about closing line value, we talk about good bets that lose and bad bets that win. Don't fall victim to confirmation bias. And just because you get a good result, let it dissuade you from doing the right things that are going to pay dividends over the long haul.
When we saw this coaching staff on Hard Knocks, and it was so embarrassing that I couldn't finish watching some of the episodes. I mean, even the special teams coordinator, John Fossil, like, great guy. And he's come up with some innovative things, right? I mean, he was the guy that was responsible for, like, the onside kick last year in the Atlanta comeback. I mean, you got this guy talking to 22-year-old kids telling them, running as a reward. And this is one of the worst compiled coaching staffs in the entire league.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things for the Cowboys with so many offensive weapons at their disposal. You go out there, you score 14 points early on. That game was rather bizarre from a variety of fronts. I don't think the Chargers were overly good by any stretch of the imagination, but no. I have to think that there were overbetters who were rejoicing with the way things worked early. I believe the first punt of that game came in the third quarter, and it still never got anywhere close to sniffing the total, but pace and tempo clearly play a role there, and we'll see the Cowboys again, as we mentioned, on display a week from today, playing host to Philadelphia Eagles, and the Chargers will have their most daunting test in the division when they go to Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs. Anything else from a good, bad, and ugly standpoint that you think we're touching on before we pivot real quick to look at headlines before diving in to the barn burner we have on tap between the Lions and Pack?
I was going to, but let's save it for Chargers Kansas City, but I will frame it this way. Much more difficult being a head coach than a defensive coordinator. There are not some There's some issues going on with the Chargers, both with Joe Lombardi and Brandon Staley.
Well, nice little tease. More reason to tune in on Thursday, as, of course, the Chargers and Chiefs will be one of the marquee games that we'll break down in great detail. All right, look ahead lines, Payne, from FanDuel Sportsbook. New England. They're going to they'll play host to the New Orleans Saints. The look-ahead number there had New England listed as a modest one-point favorite in the wake of their 17-16 loss to the Dolphins. The Saints had looked like the greatest thing since sliced bread in their dismantling of the Green Bay Packers. Suddenly, New England goes out there, takes care of business against the Jets. The Saints couldn't move the football at all in their loss to the Panthers, and we're looking at New England, a full field goal favorite on Sunday afternoon.
It's interesting because let's see what the Saints look like. Right, from they kind of came down to earth. You know, they've been dealing with situations away from home for a while now. What impact does that have? Typically, some trends in the NFL, third straight road game, not the best. And I think we're starting to see what New England is. If you look metrically, they should have beaten the Dolphins. And then they come out and they exceed expectation by a wide margin against the Jets. And so that's kind of what you're seeing here is I think this is a line that now says New England's for real. The defense that got a lot of its parts back, whether it was opt-outs, injuries, also a couple off-season additions as well, that the defense is for real and that offensively Mac Jones gives them a much better chance to be multidimensional and have some efficiency through the air. Let's also monitor some of the Saints' injury situations. Does Marshawn Lattimore return this week? Does Davenport have a shot? Do four or five of the rotational depth guys defensively return? And, you know, do you get your starting center back? So there's some question marks there also with some injuries, and that's why this line is currently where it's at.
Modest move, but onto a key number between a pair of 0-2 teams at MetLife Stadium. The Giants, extra time to prepare. They'll welcome in Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons. Look ahead at FanDuel Sportsbook. Made the Giants a 2.5-point favorite, now out to a full field goal.
You can see some justification in this number simply because we all think the Giants probably should have won in a tough spot on Thursday night, and now you do get that extra time. We'll say the Falcons showed better here against Tampa. Offensively, they did some things that were substantially better than the opener against Philadelphia. Arthur Smith was more aggressive. Arthur Smith was more clued in to what his offense could do better, right? You're relying on an offensive line to like run the ball all the time. And it's like, you know, we kind of have to air this ball out a little bit more. And so he took some large steps in week two as a head coach, which you like to see. Let's see where this line trends.
Always interesting to see how some of these numbers start to move around. And last but not least, a modest move, albeit one coming off the key. We haven't seen Green Bay play yet. San Francisco look-ahead price for Sunday Night Football at FanDuel Sportsbook had the Niners a 3-point favorite. That number out to 3.5 or even 4 in some spots, up to 4 at FanDuel, kind of the top of the market.
I could be wrong, and correct me if I am, but I could have sworn at some point this offseason prior to some of the uncertainty surrounding Aaron Rodgers, that the look-ahead line for the game of the year stuff had Green Bay a favorite and a pretty substantial one.
I'll have to go back and look at some of the reports that I get. I don't remember seeing them a favorite, but I definitely don't think it was the 49ers even close to a key number.
It wasn't, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, this line will come off the board right before kickoff tonight of Green Bay Detroit. And so if you see an edge here, you probably should go attack it now. But it is an interesting number at this point. And it's an opener that says San Francisco wins by about four touchdowns. But in saying that, if Green Bay goes out and covers tonight and looks itself, that certainly isn't going to reopen for. So that's the great debate here.
Yep, for sure. And it's a matchup that has not exactly been kind to the Packers in the past, as you've seen 49ers impose their will physically multiple times in the last couple of years, but a game that'll bear watching based on Sunday Night Football's results. All right, on to the final game of the NFL slate for week two. Takes us to Lambeau Field, where Green Bay will welcome in a division rival, and it's Green Bay, an 11.5-point favorite, total in the game 48.5 pain at FanDuel Sportsbook. The Detroit Lions have not played on a Monday night since October 14th, 2019, a game they lost 23-22 to Green Bay amid a myriad of miscues that should have had Detroit winning that game outright. It's been 15 years since the Packers started a season 0-2. It's never happened under Aaron Rodgers' leadership. And when you look at Green Bay, well, they come into this one off the worst loss of Aaron Rodgers' career, 35-point defeat at the hands of the New Orleans Saints. Fewest points Green Bay has mustered in a Aaron Rodgers-led start where he actually began the second half. When you look at the Packers, 6-0 straight up and 6-0 against the spread in a limited sample size, coming in off a loss under Matt LaFleur. And the Packers will become the first team favored by double digits after a 30-point loss since the 2014 Eagles, and only the 12th team to get thrust into this role since the NFL merger back in 1970. But the silver lining for Green Bay, since 2005, teams favored by double digits the week after losing by 20 plus points, a robust 16-7 against the number. I give you all of that pain to ask the biggest question of all in this matchup. Does Detroit have anything in the secondary that can slow down a Green Bay passing attack if it starts to play downhill tonight?
Aaron Rodgers is certainly chomping at the bit to get back out there after his largest loss ever and seeing this secondary, which you're kind of hinting isn't very good. It's all accurate, right? I mean, the Lions defense can't stop the pass. Dead last in defensive pass efficiency last year, dead last in passing touchdown rate allowed. Week one against San Francisco, the Lions defense allowed 14.1 yards per pass attempt and a 70% passing success rate the first three quarters. And now your number one corner in Jeffrey Okuda is out. There is some buzz rolling around this week that the Saints may have figured out how to defend the Packers, and that's going to be the blueprint moving forward. Let's see. I mean, the Saints basically played a cover two shell. They didn't send extra rushers. They dropped defenders to stop intermediate passes, and they had their backside defenders stay home to negate some of what Aaron Rodgers likes to do with rollouts and boots. That style works if you can stop the run with your front four and five or six guys in the box. And that's what we saw against the Saints. The Packers were held to 2.9 a carry, a 20% rushing success rate. They didn't record a single explosive run. So the Saints dominated in the trenches despite playing with this light box. And then the game, you know, got out of hand and Green Bay had to pass. If you look at Aaron Rodgers, though, last season during his MVP season, when he faced any variation of two deep safeties, his passer rating dipped 22 points. His adjusted net yards per attempt declined 1.1 yards. His touchdown to interception ratio was a shade over 2-1. Devontae Adams' production was substantially worse against two high safeties as well. But against single high coverage, right, cover one or cover three, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams just ate all season, right? When Adams was targeted against cover one or cover three at a league high, 13 touchdowns. He caught 82% of his targets. Rodgers had a 140 passer rating when targeting Rodgers, when targeting Adams in that coverage. Detroit last week against San Francisco played the highest rate of cover three, and they also blitzed at the highest rate in the league. The exact opposite of what the Saints and Dennis Allen did. The opposite of what, you know, slowed Aaron Rodgers down a little bit last season and then again in week one. So maybe Aaron Glenn changes some things, runs a defense that he didn't intend to run, and throws a wrinkle or two here with extra day of prep. I'm not sure Detroit has the defensive pieces to even attempt to mimic this. You know, their defensive line is not very good. A couple guys are banged up along the line for this game. Whether they play, let's see. Certainly not going to be 100%. But you have a Lions defense that finished 29th in defensive line yards last season, 27th in pass rush win rate. Any projections that I saw for the Detroit defensive line coming into the season had the Lions defensive line basically bottom third of the league. So I don't even know if they have the talents or the pieces to attempt to mimic what gave Aaron Rodgers trouble last year and what the Saints did in week one. This just kind of feels like a get-right game for the Packers on this side of the ball.
What, you mean the Lions allowing 30-plus points in seven straight games, flirting with the NFL record for futility if they can make it eight tonight, isn't a harbinger of things to come for them putting together a lockdown defensive effort against the Packers off an embarrassing performance?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, not a great matchup. You know, we all look at this and we're like, oh, yeah, like, you know, Detroit's defense is bad and they struggle in the secondary. But again, even like some of the scheme element of this, Detroit is going to do, at least how they want to be built with Aaron Glenn and how they execute in week one, is the stuff that Green Bay just absolutely shreds.
Yeah, I can't imagine Green Bay, if they're going to believe they have title aspirations, should struggle in any way, shape, or form with an extra day to prepare against this Lions stop unit. Now, the other side of the ball, I think, probably gets a lot more fascinating. When you're talking about a Green Bay defense that generated just five pressures on Jameis Winston the entire game last week and four quarterback hits, things don't get any easier with Za'Darius Smith put on short-term IR. And the one thing we've seen from Green Bay over the years, and you were banging the drum for this years ago, the way to beat this Packers defense that's a little bit lighter up front is to establish the ground game and use a physically imposing offensive line. That's one area where maybe Detroit has the personnel to put some stress on Green Bay defensively.
You get that furball situation handled over there?
I don't know. I think it still might come up again. I didn't exactly prepare for this podcast and the fact that I have no water anywhere in my office. So I'm trying to hack and wheeze my way through this because, you know what? I am the model of intestinal fortitude.
So when you say prepare, you meant the water situation and not the actual preparation of the podcast.
The actual preparation is there, but the water situation is not.
The gallon jug is not by your side.
I think it's sitting on the kitchen counter, I'm not going to lie.
We're certainly playing through the elements. I'm talking to you on a different phone because I didn't have the other one on the charger all weekend. And so here we are. We're just
making it work.
Some situations
We're making it work. You know, if everything went the way we drew it up, this business would be way too easy, even on the content creation, let alone actually winning games at the window. So sometimes you got to fight through a little bit of adversity.
I like it. So, you know, the Lions offense isn't good. It's certainly not good enough to get in a shootout here. Their weakness, however, might actually be a strength tonight, right? They're going to need to be old school. They're going to have to run this antiquated, run-happy offense with Anthony Lynn. Shorten this game. Limit possessions. Rely on the very best part of this team, which is the Lions' offensive line. You can look at the final score last week against San Francisco and see 33 points and that Goff threw three touchdowns and think, wow. It was garbage time, though. San Fran already had their bags packed. In the first half, Goff threw for 3.5 yards an attempt and a 32 passing success rate with a pick. But the Lions' ground game was actually really good last week. 5.2 a carry in the first half, had four explosive runs. The weakness, as you mentioned, Todd, is Green Bay up front. One of the Smith brothers is also out. Last season, they got bullied along the defensive line. Finished 24th in line yards, 20th in run-stop win rate. Over 52% of opponent runs graded successful. The Lions have to be able to run the ball, shorten this game to stick within the number, period. When Goff does throw it, the running backs are probably going to be involved here because, one, he loves checking the ball down, and two, the Lions receiver group is both poor and banged up. So I would expect when Goff does throw it, a heavy dose of DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams out of the backfield and his revenge game. The Packers weren't great defending running back passes last season, gave up about 8.5 yards a reception. Joe Barry is obviously the new DC. He came over from the Rams, so a different scheme, which could help in that area. But the Rams were slightly better defending that type of pass than the Packers were, so let's see if the scheme helps that. But there's just not much on this side of the ball, Todd. Either the Lions can lean on their hogs up front and run the ball, or this probably gets ugly.
How dare you not place some respect on some of these Lions receivers when their number one, at least on paper, is most likely Quintez Cephus. And all you read this week out of the Detroit Free Press is how optimistic the Lions are about a player named Trinity Benson, who they picked up 3 days before the first game of the season, and they want him to suddenly catapult into being a prominent piece of their offense. Hey, Trinity, if you're out there listening, go out there and prove me wrong, but I don't think that's exactly a ringing endorsement for what the Lions are going to get in the receiving game, knowing that Tyrell Williams expected to miss with a concussion places them in a bit of a perilous situation. One thing I do want to ask about...
Two things before you ask me a question here. Number one is Trinity's father likely came up with that name in a strip club. And number two, you pay for the Detroit Free Press. You pay that dollar.
No. I've read I read the free articles. It was a rough weekend at the window, so I couldn't afford to get the 6 months of access for a dollar.
Couldn't pony up the dollar.
You know, if I ponied up a dollar for every newspaper that wants me to pay to read their stuff, just get sports books to advertise there. I'm sure our partners at FanDuel will be more than happy to advertise, whether it's the Clarion Star Ledger, the Detroit Free Press, or any other newspaper out there where I try and get articles. That paywall thing is rather maddening. I'm not going to lie, Payne.
This has turned into like streaming television where no one's come together to like offer this package of all the streaming networks. They're just all doing their own thing now. It's the same thing with the written articles. Like, it's the process of like putting in your card to pay a dollar. It just boggles my mind.
It's all about microtransactions now and recurrent billing and everything else. And don't get me started on streaming services and all of that, because I think I pay for every single one of them to watch European soccer leagues and Lord knows what else that ends up accumulating faster than my DirecTV bill ever did. But one thing I did want to ask you about in terms of relationships here, if you're Matt LaFleur now, granted, you weren't with Jared Goff since 2017, but how does that level of familiarity, you think, impact the way Green Bay can go about preparing for him?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think that is a factor in this game, which I was going to kind of keep tucked in the vest, but it's certainly something that he's seen all the time, right? And that is going to play a factor in this game. But I think at this stage, we know what Jared Goff is. So it's not something that's too far outside the box. Kind of hinted at his production in the first half when the scheme that Detroit wants to implement is out there, right? Second half, you're adjusting to the scoreboard. And so this is a quarterback that likes to dink and dunk his way down the field, and that's why he is now in Detroit and not in sunny California. And so when he goes to throw the ball here, it's going to be a lot of tight ends and running backs. And it just comes up to, you know, the new DC to get that handled. I mean, if you are the Packers tonight, your defense should be playing in a phone booth. I want Jared Goff to attempt to beat me down the field deep with a receiver core that is not of an NFL standard. I'm not letting that ground game just chunk me to death 4, 5, 6, 7 yards a clip as my offense sits on the sidelines and Aaron Rodgers is picking splinters out of his ass. I want an aggressive defensive approach, and that'll be interesting to see if there is that adjustment from the Packers defense, because it's from that Brandon Staley mantra defensively, right? It's we're going to play with 5 defensive backs. We're going to force teams to run the ball, which is less efficient. That game plan needs to change tonight. There needs to be more mass in the box. And if you can stop the run, then this game gets ugly.
Get excited. I know everyone will be glued to the edge of their seat watching the Jamal Williams revenge game tonight at Lambeau with Green Bay, an overwhelming favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. Want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, FanDuelSportsbook.com/bet the board. Plenty of great promotions available for you. Bet boosts, everything you can think of to try and take advantage of inefficient markets that might be out there. 30-1 promotion will be available starting Tuesday for Philadelphia against Dallas. We're talking about all new users risking $5, having a chance to get $150 return on investment. The same thing for Denver and the Jets. Restrictions do apply, so read that fine print, and you will put yourself in a good spot. All right, Payne, last word goes to you before we're shutting it down for the day.
That's it.
All right.
That's all I got.
Hey, man, a few words.
We had this discussion last week.
Yeah, no, but that's why I wanted to open it up
gonna,
to you.
You were going to close it out. Oh, you're going to do the opposite of what we discussed.
Well, I know, but I mixed it up, and then we go back to Wednesday. You're going to tell me, you're going to text me after the show and go, you know what, there was something else I wanted to say, and you're not going to be able to say it. So, you know, all of our listeners are hearing it here first. But, all right.
That's it.
All right, we're done. We've done enough damage for a Monday morning. Best of luck for all of you, our loyal listeners out there, with whatever way you choose to play Monday Night Football or anything else in the next 40 hours. We'll be back with you on Wednesday with a little college football action. In the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.